Hello and welcome to the Bringing Rural Back podcast, where we help you live a more prepared and sustainable life today so that you can have a better tomorrow no matter what. This is your host Greg Carter and this is episode number 38. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about choosing a simple life in a complex world. But before we get to that, let's do our chores, shall we? I'd like to remind you all about the Listener Appreciation Contest. You must sign up for the contest. There is a link at the blog where you can sign up. All you have to do is enter your email address and name and click a little box that says that you promised to share this show in some way. As soon as we reach 1,000 subscribers on our feed burner list, then we'll be giving away a $50 Amazon gift card. Next, I'd like to remind everybody about the Rural Roundtable. The Rural Roundtable is a group of experts that have agreed to take your questions on everything from urban preparedness to essential oils and everything in between. So, if you have a question for some of our experts, don't hesitate to send them to theruraleconomist@gmail.com. I'll make sure and get it to the appropriate expert, and then we'll have the answer in an upcoming show. With that, let's get to our topic, choosing a simple life in a complex world. Now, like so many of the things that I share with you, this started as a conversation. My wife found a lady that makes homemade soaps not far from where we live. Now, do I know how to make soaps? Yes, I do. Don't really have time to do it. That's one of the things that we have to learn when we're trying to be more self-sufficient, self-sustainable, is that all of these things take time and you've got to prioritize. And I'll just be honest, making homemade soaps isn't very high on my priorities list. So, I got off work, took a little bit of a nap, got cleaned up, and was ready to go for a visit with this wonderful lady. We looked at the map, and I had realized that I had noticed her store before, but we had never stopped. So we went to her store, and as soon as we pulled in, we were greeted by chickens, dogs, and a very respectable size flock of guinea fowl. Got out, and they were putt-racking right along. I like guinea fowl, but they're a bit of a handful. They will fly up on top of everything. I remember when I was a kid, we had some guinea fowl, and we had a lady up the road. Her name was Miss Pearl, and Miss Pearl was so mad because our guinea fowl would fly up and roost in the tree above her carport, or actually it was a barn or shed that she parked her car in. Made my dad so mad he threatened to feed them pokeberries. Now, if you're rural at all, you'll understand what that means, but if not, I'm going to clue you in. Whenever a bird eats pokeberries, it turns their poop purple. So Dad was a little ill. Well, when we arrived at the store was unlocked, but no one was in the store. There was a neat little note that stated that if Susie wasn't available, just leave the money in a jar in the fridge and not to worry, because she had done this for over 10 years. We looked around for a while, and Susie did make it to the store. I'm really glad she did. She had about, I don't know, 5 or 6 varieties of soap on sale, and said that her selection was always changing. I told a buddy of mine that we were going to go to her store, and he said, oh, if she's got it, be sure and pick up some oatmeal honey shampoo, because it was real good for some skin problems that he had. Well, at that time, she didn't have any, so she said it would be about 6 weeks before she made that particular variety. So I'll have to tell him that next time I see him. The small store, and I mean it was very small, was a mixture of older books, Amish cheeses and jellies, fresh farm eggs, homegrown herbs, and of course her homemade soaps. Proudly displayed on the store's counter were copies of her book, Simple Times at Old Field Farm, which is a compilation of her articles that she had written for the Co-op magazine. This lady and I are a generation apart. And even though we came from different base ideologies, we came to the same end result. Susie is a self-proclaimed former hippie, and I was raised backwoods conservative. Now, she was raised on a farm too, but we all tend to take diverting pathways to get to where we are when we grow up. We both came to the point to where we value freedom and a desire to not be dependent on the systems of support. Both of us have a desire to carve out our own little piece of the world without the intrusion of governmental or corporate entities. Now, I really enjoyed talking to Susie. She's much further along in the path to self-sufficiency than I. I was encouraged just by being able to talk with her at length. Susie had managed to do something that many of us aspire to do, and many more never realize how fulfilling a life that can be. She owns her own business, which provides for herself. She heats with wood that's harvested on her own property. She has chickens and goats and ducks and guineas and does organic gardening and all of the other things that, you know, we work towards. She's able to, with her store's income and the income that she gets from writing for the co-op magazine, she's able to support her lifestyle. Now, would she be considered rich? Oh, heck no. But she's got everything that she needs. So, what did we talk about? Well, one of the first things that we talked about was the back to land movement. More and more people are trying to live a more simple and sustainable life. Susie's seen a couple of these movements and has seen some of them wane. We both believe that the current movement is more sustainable than movements in the past. You know, one of the reasons that I personally believe that this back to the land movement, or simplicity movement, if some people have started calling it, is more sustainable is because people are doing it right where they are. In the back to the land movements of the past, people have tried to move out of the cities or the high population areas. While there's still some of that occurring now, it's not the principal driver. People are looking at the land that they have. And it doesn't matter if it's a 10th acre or 2 acres or anything in between or a 60 acre spread. They're trying to improve their sustainability exactly where they are. Urban and suburban homesteads are popping up everywhere. People all over are learning the old skills. Knitting, soap making, gardening, keeping chickens are growing at a rate that I personally have never seen. And these are occurring in areas that you would think would be unlikely. Another thing that I found interesting for her as she was telling me her stories, and she was very willing to share her stories, is that no matter who you are, no matter what you're doing, there are always people who want to stop you. She told a story about a man who approached her at the local farmers co-op and told her a story about how his daughter had horrible allergies, and he had heard that using goat's milk would help her allergies and it would be good for his daughter. She told him that she was sorry, but she wasn't set up to sell milk to anybody. Alabama doesn't have a small herd exemption, and that kind of bugs me. And that even if she wanted to, at the time, her nannies were dry. Well, it turned out that this man was trying to set her up, and that he was the owner of a large goat dairy in the southern part of the state. It boggles my mind that the person who owns a very large commercial goat dairy would try to set up a lady who makes soaps that only has about 5 goats. I mean, come on, really? That's scummy. This man proved that there are people who will do anything to hurt people that they see as a threat in any way. This is deplorable. Next thing we talked about is how corporations are never satisfied. Now, last year or year before last is when Alabama just first got its cottage business laws. Before that, it was up to each individual farmer's market, municipality, and even county and even community as to what they would allow be sold and not be sold. Now, I'm against it completely. I hate laws that tell you what's legal to do. She actually was more supportive, okay, because of the confusion of freedom. Okay, that just bugs the fire out of me, but when you have each community going, well, now we don't want that, then, you know, as soon as the manager of the farmer's market changes, then all of a sudden the rules change. Well, with the cottage business laws, it made it crystal clear what things were and what things were not allowed. Now, I think I've said before that when you have a law that says what is legal, then a lot of people think whatever isn't covered by that law is illegal by default. I don't like it. I understand it, but I don't like it. Well, you know, I love my state. I really do. I believe that Alabama is one of the best states in the United States, but it does have its problems. One of these problems is just how many of our politicians are owned by corporate interests. Well, one of the big corporations actually tried to make it illegal to sell homemade soaps. This would have put this lady out of business and would have destroyed her livelihood. They don't care. They want all the control. I'm glad there was no way they could make this happen, at least for now. But it still just goes to illustrate how much power and greed have influenced the business and political world. Corporations just can't stand the thought, oh my God, that there are people who are forging a world in spite of and outside of them. Yeah, seriously? That's so wrong on so many levels. And let me tell you something. I don't figure there are any statists that listen to me. But I'm going to tell you, 90% of these laws have nothing to do with safety. That's how it's marketed. That's how it's sold. But all it really has to do with is money. Whether or not I want to buy something from you or from anybody else should be simply between me and you. I can't deal with it. Well, next thing we talked about is use the system when you can, but don't betray your principles. Now, this one kind of got me. Okay? She really made me think. I have opportunities from time to time that would actually help me make a little bit of money off my blog and podcast. But I just, you know, I can't do it. You know, now I'll be honest with you. We don't produce 100% of our calories on this farm. We have to go to the grocery store. Yes, we do. But my goal is to be as self-sustainable as possible. And I share with you all of my triumphs and all of my failures and all of my stresses and all of that stuff. I share with you what drives me crazy and what makes me happy. But the thing about it is I cannot in good conscience write some glowing or record some glowing review, or, oh, I use insert so-and-so brand name chicken, I don't know, anything, and it was so wonderful. I just can't do it. But, you know, this lady, she writes for the Co-op magazine. She gets paid for writing and admits that she's often in trouble with the Co-op for her writings. Now, her writings are obviously popular enough that they can't get rid of her. And I'm sure it's difficult on her because the Co-op is the number one seller of agricultural chemicals and GMO seeds in the state. Now, her views would be considered in stark contrast to the Co-op's hierarchy. They're looking at a profit. And how do they profit? They profit by selling Roundup and 2,4-D and GMO seeds and all of the stuff. But they also profit not near as highly from their small selection of organic things that they sell as well. But they know that the dominant force of their market is the big commercial agricultural outlets. But her writing is so good and so popular that this genteel woman, being in stark contrast to the public stance of the system, they just cannot afford to get rid of her. She gained a lot of respect from me with that. And it made me rethink, okay, where can I wade into the system and not change who I am to help improve my stance? It's not about ego. It's not about anything like that. It's about sharing. And if I can share with somebody, if, you know, I've said this before, if I can convince one person to start working towards a more sustainable life, then I've done my job for that day. So by me rejecting the system wholeheartedly, am I really messing up? I'm still evaluating that, so we'll see where it falls. Another thing that she taught me is every step towards self-sufficiency is worthwhile. Now, I believe this all the time, but, you know, when you come in contact with another person face-to-face that's actually living as much of a self-sustainable life as they possibly can, it's always inspiring. You know, right now, we're still in the reduce and produce stages. We've not gotten to the point where we're able to sever any of the systems. We've greatly reduced our dependence on the systems. You know, we were looking at our electric bill this past month, and we're down a solid third of the amount of electricity that we used last year for the same month. So we are making improvements. We are growing. We are doing better, but there's still a long way to go. Whenever you talk to somebody who's truly interested in self-sustainability, they're always going to ask you if you live a sustainable life. The honest answer for almost everyone, or at least it should be the honest answer, is I'm working toward it. Very few in the sustainability community would dare say, if you aren't completely sustainable, you're not doing enough. You know, we all know that it's a journey or a pathway. Every step takes us closer to freedom and liberty. when you happen to meet a person that's living the life closer to what you're wanting, take the time to listen. Show respect. They've been on the path longer than you have and will normally be more than willing to share some of the lessons that they have learned. It's almost always worth the time and effort. Now, this little lady, it was a joy, it was a privilege and a pleasure to get to talk to her. You know, it was really cool to be able to talk to this lady who had written her first book and had it proudly displayed. And to hear her talk about how her son had made solar panels, and that when he got time, she was hoping that he would make some for her, that way she could at least run her little shop on completely off-grid. We talked about how maybe she could add a wood heater into her little shop, how she was thinking about expanding. It's always good. It's always good when I'm able to come across someone who's doing what I want to do, who's living the life that I want to live, who can be an example for me. She was a great encouragement to me. So, if you're ever in Blount County, Alabama, look up Old Field Farm General Store. Tell Susie that I sent you. She'll be more than happy to talk with you. That's all I've got for today, folks. Step by step, we're bringing rural back. Bye-bye.